Yeah, thanks for the organizers, to the organizers for inviting me and the support and everything. And thank you for bearing with me at this late hour. I hope you find some interest in this. So I'm going to talk about the certain type of instability that occurs in the Oregon model, which describes supposedly the light-sensitive Luger-Subotinsky reaction. And the flavor of these organizing centers is that somehow it might explain how the building blocks of this instability and in particular what happens after it and how might be found in this oregonator model and how the instability might be explained in the sense that why does it occur at all. Just to give you a bit of the flavor of what these phenomenology is, on the left there are, or these pictures are all, except for that one there, are all space-time plots. Time goes down, space is horizontal. On the left, we see there that there's a primary pulse, I would call it, is traveling to this side with a certain speed, and then it undergoes an instability, it splits, and there's a secondary pulse traveling in this direction, then this one reaches kind of the boundary here and dies out, and this happens in a periodic fashion here. But the point for me is that there's a primary pulse traveling, and somehow in its wake there is an instability occurring, which creates secondary pulses. And the similar phenomenon here in this experimental picture, there's a primary concentration pulse traveling, and periodically out of its wake there are some unstable objects created. This has been found in numerical simulations of a model for something completely different, namely the CO oxidation on platinum. There's a primary pulse traveling, secondary pulses periodically traveling in the opposite direction. And in the zoo of phenomenology, one also finds, for example, a defect like this, which is in some sense similar to what Björn was talking about this morning. It looks like a flip-flop or a one-dimensional spiral due to the interaction of these pulses that are created. And these interactions can, in fact, create much more intrigue patterns like the Sierpinski type patterns here. These are periodic boundary conditions where there's an annihilation going on. Things like that. And this annihilation is actually what one would expect, because this is excitable media with an activator-inhibitor type kinetics. And this is what one sees here. I hope you can kind of see it. There's an activator species here which shoots up very quickly. Then afterwards there's the inhibitor which goes up a little bit slower. The activator thereby decreases, and then the inhibitor creates this refractory phase here where the medium is not easily excitable anymore. So one would expect when two pulses are colliding that they annihilate each other because of this refractory phase. And the idea to explain this instability heuristically is that this refractory phase actually along the parameter is gone, in the sense that this inhibitor here decreases much faster and the activator still is large. And then heuristically one could think, well, maybe there's a possibility of the pulse creating secondary patterns in its wake. So that's kind of a heuristic idea. What could be the explanation for this? Other phenomenology, more towards what I will be looking at, is shown in these other simulations now of models. This one, all these are somehow for calcium influence. This is a two-state model. This is the three-state model of the same kinetics. And here we have a defect line again, along which now there are pairs created. One pulse travels in the same direction, the other one in the opposite direction, and this repeats periodically until here there are boundary effects, apparently at least. I mean, this is taken out of the paper of these guys. And then for the three-state model, the second pulse, which travels in the opposite direction, somehow is not there anymore, and this makes it somehow easier because now all the objects travel in the same direction with the same speed. And this is what I call trace firing. They call it secondary trailing waves, that they are periodically in the trace or in the wake of the pulse, secondary pulses are created traveling in the same direction. This happens here in the other model in a very similar fashion. And the model I'm going to look at, as indicated at the beginning, is the oregonator, where this can also be observed. However, there's a slight twist that this is in fact transient, because there are large-scale homogeneous oscillations which will after a while prevail. I'll go into how one can make this more permanent in a moment. Just let me look at this space-time plot for a moment. We see, as indicated at the beginning, there are at least two characteristic speeds, namely one is the pulse speed itself, and then the speed of the defect. And I'm going to look at this in terms of spatial dynamics, so I'm going to go into frames and try to understand how is the spatial dynamics created, or how can this be helpful to understand what is going on. So we have the pulse train speed, which is in this case 3.4, and going into this frame, what one would see is there's the background state here in front of it, then since we are going in the frame with this, there's a standing pulse, next to it another standing pulse, and a whole chain. In the omega limit set, it would just be a heterokinetic connection between the background state here and this whole chain of large-scale pulses on the other side. On the other hand, if we go into the frame with a defect, something else goes on. This sync here and source, these are the classifications which would be the equivalent to what Björn was talking about in the morning about heterokinetic connections between, in fact, periodic patterns. But one can think of this defect here as a source. There's the group velocity which points in that direction, so perturbations are transported outside here. And in this frame, what we find is heteroclinic connection again in space between the background state now on the left, and on the right there's a space-time periodic orbit, which kind of creates these large-scale pulses which travel outside. And there's a whole zoo of such defects. Here's just another one which is for a very close-by parameter. Now this time connecting spatially homogeneous and temporally large-scale oscillations, which are in fact the ones that I just said would destroy the leftmost picture after a while. So still, despite this transient nature, I want to look at this now in the co-moving frame with a pulse and try to understand some characteristics of the instability there. So I'm going into a co-moving frame down here, parameter phi is the light intensity, which when lowered makes the medium more oscillatory and less excitable in some sense. And as we change the parameter and go lower, what happens to the pulse is that there are rather large oscillations created in the wake. And at a certain threshold parameter value, out of the first of these oscillations, there's a pulse growing. This repeats periodically until the whole medium is filled. And I would just like to show you a simulation of that. So this is a direct simulation just with the Dirichlet boundary condition for the equilibrium in front, Neumann boundary conditions on the left, and there the first secondary pulse was created. Now there's the next one, and this just continues until the medium is filled. These Dirichlet boundary conditions in the front make this transient process, in fact, now permanent, because it exactly suppresses these homogeneous oscillations which was otherwise destroyed. And the idea is somehow that even though that might be might seem a bit artificial, but still it kind of unveils the kind of nature of the phenomenology behind this transiency. Okay, this is again shown down here in the time series, time 0, time 50, 1000, and well, that's not actual time, but the time steps of the simulation. And here at the end, as I indicated earlier, there's a connection between the background state, which I just cut off here, and this large-scale oscillation. Spatial dynamics, we've heard about this a lot of times today, but still let me just introduce this in this context again. We have the reaction-diffusion system, with a parameter in the kinetics. We go into a co-moving frame with a certain speed c here. This is the pulse's speed. That changes the equation by introducing this convection term here. Then I view this variable xi as being a time variable, and I look at coherent structures where the time derivative in this co-moving frame vanishes. So solutions to this second-order ODE, which I cast as a first-order system now with two parameters, and it lives in R2n if all the species diffuse. Then bounded solutions of this ODE correspond to traveling wave solutions and vice versa. For example, a homoclinic orbit corresponds, this equilibrium is the background state. Now leaving this background state corresponds to going along this flat region here, making the excursion corresponds to that excursion and relaxing back corresponds to that relaxing back there. Similarly, we obtain these N pulses corresponding to N homoclinic orbits and this invading pulse chain, which is kind of the outcome of the trace firing, is a heteroclinic connection between the pulse train and the equilibrium. And in the other models where these simulations, where the stress firing occurred, at least in most of them, what people found, and this is in fact also true for the Gray-Scott model, that there is a certain T point in parameter space, which is a codimension 2 point corresponding to a heteroclinic cycle. So it's a codimension 2 heteroclinic cycle between two equilibria. This was analyzed in some extent mathematically already in the late 80s. And what the cycle consists of is the following. We have the, if you ignore this part for a moment, there's a heteroclinic connection between the background state and another equilibrium state, this heteroclinic connection here. And then there's a heteroclinic connection from this background state making the large excursion back to the original background state. And the idea is that there's a pulse, family of pulses, which along the parameter come closer and closer to this heteroclinic cycle. Thereby, this background state, the second background state, creates a plateau in the wake. This plateau or this background state is absolutely is strongly unstable in some sense, which I'll explain later. And thereby, the instability of this pulse can be explained because it picks up the instability or it inherits the instability of this plateau. And similarly, the analysis contains the fact that nearby such a heteroclinic cycle, one finds actually these pulses, one finds the end pulses, and these other constituents. So in that sense, it's an organizing center because it tells you where these constituents come from and where the instability comes from. And this, I would like to look at this kind of from this perspective on the origonator model, which is like this. We have three species. Two of them diffuse. There's a quadratic reaction kinetics, in fact, of a singular perturbed type of structure with three timescales. Epsilon is like 0.1. Delta is like 0.01. And the parameter phi, which I'm looking at, goes into the model in this fashion here. However, I'm not going to exploit in any way the singular perturbed structure, but I would like to advocate that there's somebody doing it because I think it would be an interesting project. In the co-moving frame, the ODE is now five-dimensional because only two species diffuse, and it has this form down here. And now what I'm going to do is just make some abstract point of view on the dynamics on a five-dimensional ODE. But first, some more information about this specific model. Here's a bifurcation diagram. On the left, this is a bifurcation in phi. Phi is horizontal. In this direction, it's just some amplitude of the solution. There's the background state being this equilibrium down here. First, let's look at the red curve. The red curve corresponds to the kinetics, which undergo here a Hopf bifurcation, and the periodic orbits that are created correspond to spatially homogeneous temporal oscillations. It's just what the kinetics does. And then these undergo a Carnot-type explosion here, which hints at the fact that the singular perturbed structure plays a role. And then there's a large-scale oscillation here, which is the one that eats up these transient backfiring, the trace firing. And you see the trace firing, critical value for the trace firing is actually behind this saddle node of the periodic orbits here, so the large-scale oscillations are indeed the ones one would expect after a while. But this red curve, I say, doesn't play really the important role for this phenomenon. This is the red curve is taken out by taking boundary conditions, which are Dirichlet in front. And then this black curve becomes interesting, which is the bifurcation curve for the now for the traveling wave ODE. So these curves somehow have nothing to do with each other. I just put them on top of each other to say where the parameter values are. And of course, I mean there is some relation, but that happens in completely different senses in some sense. So these oscillations here, which come from this now, which I call the Xi or the spatial Hopf bifurcations, these oscillations correspond to spatially periodic patterns which travel with this speed c. And I just picked a certain speed to make this curve, which is close to the one where the pulse is that just becomes unstable. Okay, now the idea is that these oscillations here, these homogeneous oscillations, in fact, play a mediator role for this instability. In the sense, and they play, what I claim is they play the role of this plateau. And they are the ones, these oscillations that come from the spatial Hopf bifurcations are the ones that are responsible for these larger oscillations here. Of course, the oscillations in the decay come from the fact that it's a focus now, But the size of these oscillations, that it's so large and that's where that comes from, is what I claim has to do with these periodic orbits. And for that, let me just zoom in a little bit into this critical region and just stretch everything out. Again, this black curve are these spatial oscillations. The green curve now is something else. This is the pulse itself, the pulse path followed in parameter space, and it undergoes a saddle node here. And this saddle node then corresponds to the instability of the where the trace firing sets in. And in all this parameter regime here, there's a stable trace firing. So it's kind of a subcritical bifurcation to the trace firing. The pulse loses stability at a certain point and, in fact, loses existence by this bifurcation here. And I want to argue then that somehow this periodic orbits play a role in there. And the idea is that somewhere in parameter space, unfortunately at a point where I couldn't find yet, so it's of course a weak point, but the idea is that there is an organizing center behind, which is just very a strong analogy to the T-point. Namely, it's a heteroclinic cycle where I have a transverse intersection, in this case, from the equilibrium to the periodic orbit, and then from the periodic orbit to the equilibrium back, this is this sketch here, from the periodic orbit to the equilibrium, there's a codimension 2 heteroclinic orbit. And in this heteroclinic cycle, something else happens now than in the T-point case. In the T-point case, one can have, where both were equilibria, one can have a codimension 2 heteroclinic cycle where the upper intersection is transverse but only one-dimensional. But here, since I have a periodic orbit, when one does the counting correctly of the dimensions, one would expect, in fact, for a codimension 2 cycle, a two-dimensional intersection. So that gives some more richness in the intersection, and this richness is what I will exploit in the analysis then. Just some more flavor of such a heteroclinic cycle. For the originator, the dimensions would be that the Morse index of the equilibrium is 3, the Morse index of the periodic orbit, so where I take the center unstable dimension, is 2, it's an R5. So what I would have to match for the upper connection is a three-dimensionally unstable manifold with a four-dimensionally center-stable manifold. 3 plus 4 is 7 in R5 makes 2, so I would expect a two-dimensional transverse intersection. On the other hand, I have a two-dimensionally unstable manifold matching with a two-dimensional stable one in R5, so I would expect I need two parameters to match that. And when one does the counting for the periodic orbit right, it turns out that this such a system can only be expected in dimensions 4 and higher. And the originator, in some sense, is the smallest system with two diffusion species, which allows for such a cycle where at the same time the equilibrium is PDE stable, just as kind of a side remark that one can do a consideration of the stability there too. Such a cycle actually occurs in other contexts, completely different contexts. Weber, for example, found it in the laser model. Sneed and others found it in a large dimensional calcium model, but that was very recent. Now, as to the existence question, is this really an analogy to the T-point picture, where one has a curve of homoclinic solutions near such a heteroclinic cycle? And it turned out that this is something that wasn't done before. It's kind of just an ODE heteroclinic bifurcation theorem, but it's rather interesting because a priori, if one just assumes a heteroclinic cycle, then one gets a family of curves of locally unique pulses which emanate in the parameter space. And this it's a family of pulses because it's in fact in parameter spaces which be piecewise curves which are in fact disconnected. But then again, there comes this fact into play that the cycle has the additional feature of a two-dimensional intersection. And if one assumes that the two-dimensional intersection is rather rich, in the sense that it contains a curve which is homotopic to the periodic orbit in this intersection, then one in fact finds a smooth, unique curve of homoclinic orbits nearby. And this richness of the intersection is, for example, true near a Hopf bifurcation where the center manifold is just this intersection would be like a disk. And then you can make just a curve in there, and that would correspond to such a, that then this is satisfied. And the point for the other constituents is that, in fact, in the originator and then generally, if it's of Shilnikov type, one finds all these other constituents nearby. Of course, they would be large spaced rather far from each other, but the idea is that the system allows for these solutions. Just briefly, the idea of the proof, it consists mainly of two steps, and it's an adaption of Lin's method, which says, well, let's just look at the variation nearby these heteroclinic solutions, and these variational ODE then has a certain linear structure to it, which comes from exponential dichotomies due to the hyperbolicity of the objects involved, and thereby one can do in some sense linear type analysis and set up a contraction type argument to find the solutions. And the finding of the solutions consists then of two steps. One step is first find a pair of solutions which varies near a heteroclinic up here and a heteroclinic down here, and it should be matched together, so that gives kind of a boundary condition for the operator one finds. First solve that problem, and then solve the problem of matching the starting point here with the unstable manifold and matching that ending point here with the stable manifold. And all that can be done in this case, there are some problems. Because we have a periodic orbit here, the contraction argument is not so easy because there's a lack of hyperbolicity due to the phase shift, which has to do with the PDE essential spectrum. And on the other hand, the problem is that since if we make this approach of varying the solutions near these heteroclinics, then if I increase the parameter L, it would mean that I want to vary near a heteroclinic down here, but increasing L means going backwards here, whereas increasing L for the upper heteroclinic means going downstairs. So the distance between them will become large, small, and will be periodic. And this is, in fact, the reason why one only gets a discrete family of homoclinic solutions in the first place. And then these discrete ones can be patched together by exploiting the richness of the intersection here. Okay, then as to the stability problems, how can one understand the instability of the homoclinic orbit being kind of mediated by this periodic orbit? And for that, there's a nice theory, which is, in fact, much richer. But for pulses on large bounded domains, Björn Sandsteen and Arndt Scheel proved that, first of all, the point spectrum, which comes from the unbounded domain, persists. So the idea is that on a bounded domain, everything is point spectrum. On the unbounded domain, one has point spectrum and essential spectrum in the sense that there are pieces that are curves of the spectrum and pieces that are isolated points. These isolated points just persist, and these curves, they play a role of a skeleton for the clustering of eigenvalues if one has periodic boundary conditions. But under separated boundary conditions, the clustering of eigenvalues for large bounded domains, and I have separated boundary conditions here, actually occurs along the so-called absolute spectrum. And these two sets, the absolute spectrum and the essential spectrum, are different in many cases. They can be the same if one has, for example, reversibility, but in this case, they turn out to be very different. So one can have an instability on the unbounded domain, but no instability on the bounded domain, for example. And the other thing is that the bounded domain consideration actually implies that if one approaches a heteroclinic connection, the second equilibrium or periodic orbit plays the role of kind of a boundary condition. And therefore, one can conclude that if a stable pulse approaches a heteroclinic orbit with an absolutely unstable equilibrium or periodic orbit, then the critical spectrum of this pulse clusters near the absolute spectrum of the second equilibrium or periodic orbit. So in that sense, it's a rigorous statement about how the instability can be inherited by being close to a heteroclinic cycle. Just briefly, what the absolute spectrum is, those are solutions to the linearized equation where one has spatial eigenvalues, so they are of the form e to the lambda t plus nu 1 xi and e to the lambda t plus nu 2 xi, where these two spatial eigenvalues have the same real part, and also they satisfy a certain index condition. So it's a set in the complex plane consisting of curves. It's always to the left of the essential spectrum. It may be unstable, it may not be unstable when the essential spectrum is stable or unstable. And also it distinguishes between absolute instabilities or convective instabilities. So let's look at this picture now for the oregonator. I'm speeding up, sorry for going over time now. This is the background state. The spectra of the background state are, first of all, the essential spectrum are the red curves. The absolute spectrum are the green curves. the absolute spectrum is stable, clearly. Essential spectrum, there's a blow up here, is already unstable, which comes from the homogeneous oscillations, which we saw from the kinetics bifurcation. And actually, the tips here are exactly the Hopf eigenvalues from the kinetic bifurcation. On the other hand, we have the spectrum of the periodic orbit. There's a part of the spectrum here, then there's a little circle where the inset is a zoom. It extends into the unstable half plane, and there's some absolute spectrum sitting here, which means that this periodic orbit can indeed mediate this instability, because it's absolutely unstable. By the theorem we know, passing close to it, one inherits this instability. And as a remark, just this spectrum here is also the essential spectrum of the pulse, and if one assumes stable isolated spectrum, then this is the relevant picture. So the observations are the essential spectrum of the background state is unstable, but it's not the onset of the stratifying instability. The absolute spectrum is stable, so there's no instability created actually by this background state. On the other hand, the absolute spectrum of the periodic orbit is unstable. So it may play the role of this mediator. And just in conclusion for this, it gives a framework for this instability, because it is now conceivable that approaching the organizing center with an absolutely unstable gamma creates the instability and also creates all these constituents. And in fact, there's another even stronger analogy to the case of a T-point, that if one has a certain type of absolute instability, then the geometry of the path and parameter space can actually be used as an indicator of that. That's an analogy to the T-point again, that the path of the homoclinic orbit in parameter space spirals if and only, logarithmically I should add, if and only if zero is in the absolute spectrum and the absolute spectrum is unstable. That's what I mean by a real type absolute instability. I just skipped the idea of the proof here. And let me finish by discussion of this. So we saw several models which exhibited this trace firing. In some of these cases, the trace firing was attributed to this heteroclinic cycle with another equilibrium. And in the originator, one can see that it makes sense to think of this organizing center, because it's, in theory, very in strong analogy to the T-point, in the sense that the observations and the theory are coherent. The constituents exist in the instability. The constituents exist in the unfolding. The instability can be caused by these absolutely unstable wiggles in the wake, and one also has this property that the path spirals. On the other hand, what I didn't explain with all this is, why is this trace firing periodic? Where does that come from? That's another issue where I have some ideas that would be more addressing to how can this pulse be kind of splitting up into a source and a sink defect, and then have this periodic nature to it. That's something else, another story. Thank you for your attention, and bearing with me.